Picture is worth a thousand words, so you've got a picture, you can start filling in your thousand words on that one. So this is the Monopoly Man, and Dave, when you look at this, how would you unpack this a little bit? You had some interesting observations of this.
Well, you see, the Monopoly Man, there's a number of things going on here. You see, he's taking off his hat for tonight. He also is laying on his back when he sleeps. It helps him to really consider and think of some of his moves. He gets to the other way, he gets so messed up. So then you notice that there's one pillow there that's gone, and nobody's there, just Monopoly Man. So you can kind of imagine what might have happened. So Monopoly Man says, Monopoly Man lying. His next move, yeah. So his next move is going to be, is he going to buy Balzac? Or, you know,
Our place?
Yeah. Try to do some double money. So he doesn't sleep that well. I think his eyes are open, if I'm not mistaken. He just laid there like that. Now, the thing I like so much about this is it's me. It's ridiculous, you know? I started, I said, oh my God, to me. She does that all the time. So before we start tonight, I'd like to tell you that we're here. We're here because Tom and Jensen were supposed to be here, but so we're pinch hitting for them, and neither one of them will be well. I talked to Tom just before we came and bringing them, and he was very saddened, both of them, that they couldn't be here. It was difficult for them to say no, but neither one of them were well enough to come. So I thought I'd pray for them before we begin. Father, we think of Tom and Jenny and how much they mean to all of us here. And we pray for them that you would have your hand upon them and heal them and bring them back to where they want to be with you. So we ask that you would do that for them, and we would appreciate it. In Jesus' name. Amen. So I'll
do some introductions. And so we'll start with Craig here. Craig is from West Virginia, but he's been in Houston for many decades, working in the oil support services, selling pipe to oil field companies. And if I was in a war and I wanted a strong man beside me who was on mission and wouldn't stray from mission, it would be this guy. That's how I describe him. And if you think about it, I am in a war. We're all in a war, a spiritual war, and we are on a mission. In particular, Craig and I are on a mission to disciple one man at a time. So he's just a great treasure of my life. And watching him, his mother passed away recently, but watching his faithfulness to travel back to West Virginia, and just such a loving, faithful son in that whole process, that was amazing to watch. So Craig's a really special person in my life. And I'm going to jump to Donna now. You just saw Donna, so she has got such a hostess and servant heart, and she is so alongside Dave. She is just a great picture. When you go into their home, it is a blessing to watch a husband and a wife in the way that they interact. And I was so glad that happened, because that really demonstrates who Donna is. She's such a gracious home woman. And Dave has a heart for men that do not know Jesus. He is made by God to communicate to men that don't know Jesus. And I was one of those guys. So he introduced me to Jesus, and then just as importantly, he showed me how to have a relationship ongoing with Jesus. So we have a really amazing panel up here. We're going to talk about money. Obviously, we already got some Monopoly Man going. But I'll start with Craig, and I'm going to ask questions. I do want to leave some time at the end so that you guys can ask questions as well. But we'll start with some questions. So, Craig, is there a verse or are there verses in your life that have been particularly meaningful regarding money and your approach to how you handle money?
Yes. I finished the process of Operation Timothy with Dave. Dave was my Paul. I was in my early 40s, and he recommended that I go to a Crown Financial Study. And it, coincidentally, it was at Tom and Jenny Sawyer's house. I know the Hillmans were part of that, and a couple of other couples. And if you've never done a Crown Financial Study, it's a 12-chapter study about what God and the Bible has to say about money. And probably like most worldly people, I really didn't know that there was that much information. There's more information in the Bible about money than any other subject. And like with Operation Timothy, with each chapter, there's a verse associated to each chapter. And probably the first verse that really impacted me was 1 Chronicles 29:11-12. Which says that everything in the heavens and earth is yours, O Lord, and this is your kingdom. We adore you as being in control of everything. Riches and honor come from you alone, and you are the ruler of all mankind. Your hand controls power and might, and it is at your discretion that men are made great and given strength. And until really I came across that verse, I really kind of thought I was in control of my life at that stage of my life. And that verse has been a meaningful verse for me. It's a verse that I've been memorizing or reciting every morning in my prayer time, not for the Lord, but for me, just for me to realize who God is and that He's in control of everything, including money. And then another verse in this study, maybe two or three chapters later, was Proverbs 22:7. Which says, as the rich rule over the poor, so the borrower is servant to the lender. And I don't remember what version of the Bible the Crown Study was in, but it took about a year and a half to go through this study. And like Gary had mentioned earlier this morning, being with Dave, I made a commitment to start reading the Bible every day. And a few months later, I happened to be in Proverbs in my daily reading, and I came across that verse again, Proverbs 22:7, and I read the NIV Bible, and the NIV version says, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. And that word slave really affected me, because at that stage I had house debt, credit card debt, and I never felt like I was a servant when I was writing a check to my mortgage company, but I did feel like a slave. And so that was really a motivational verse for me that I did not really want to be a part of the system of the world as I was beginning this pursuit of having a relationship with Jesus Christ. So I'd say those two verses.
Great verses, Craig. So, not wanting to be a slave, so are you? Do you have any debt right now?
No, I do not.
And what was that process like to get out of debt? What did that look like in your life?
Well, I was divorced at that stage, and I had just bought a house. So I had house debt, I had car debt, I had credit card debt. I was paying child support at $2,200 a month. And I was fortunate. I was a sales guy my whole life, and so I did have a steady income. But I was paid bonuses, yearly bonuses, based on how I did or how the company did. So just following what I learned in the Crown Study, I would get a bonus, and I would start paying off the credit card debt. That was my least amount of debt. So I began to pay that off. I paid the car off. And then really kind of miraculous things started to happen in my life. I got a new job where I had a company vehicle. I was a shareholder in this company. My bonuses went up. My kids eventually moved in with me, so my credit card debt went away. So I was able to live away on my debt in a fairly short amount of time, less than 10 years, I would say, which seemed daunting at the time. And I really just got to a point where I only had debt on my house.
So I think you have a really amazing story about what that final... The house is always the big one, right? And so how do you handle that? And Gary mentioned he put a strategy together to get out of debt. So obviously this is a serious issue. And Craig, I'd love for you to share the story of what that final piece looked like in your life.
Well, I was... And, you know, it's easy to look back. You know, I mean, this happened 25 years ago, 30 years ago when I was going through this process. But I think as I look back, the thing that... You know, that I was trying to do was be obedient to the Word of God. You know, I really didn't want to be a slave to anybody. And, you know, house debt can be pretty overwhelming. But the Lord was really faithful. I have to give Him all the credit because I began to pay off debt. My kids were getting older. And so when I would get a bonus check, I knew that I was going to have to buy one of my kids a car when they turned 16 years old. So I would put that money away and I would just... paid cash for the vehicle. I started paying cash for everything. So the only thing I had left was my house, and I was walking through this with Dave and a couple other guys. And so I met Dave at Starbucks, at the Starbucks we met at, and I got the biggest bonus check I ever got. And for the sake of the story, I'm going to say the amount, just to be truthful. And I mean, it was a lot of money at the time. It's a lot of money to me now. But I realized that there's people that make this amount of money in one day. Some people make it in a month, and it takes some people 2 years to make it. But just for the sake of the story, I'm going to say what the amount is. So I said with Dave, and I said, well, Dave, and I got to tell you, I got a pretty nice check. And he said, really? You know, I said, yeah. And he said, is it enough to pay off your house? Because he knew the only thing I had left was my house. And I said, yeah. I said, but I got to be honest with you, Dave. You know, we didn't have online banking back then, and I just said, man, I look at my checkbook and the amount of money that's in there, and I'm getting a real sense of security. You know, I really like the way I feel when I look at my checkbook. And I'm thinking maybe instead of just paying my house off, maybe I'll just pay half of it off and, you know, just keep the rest and pay down on it on, you know, each month, just pay extra each month. And he looked at me and he said, well, how much was your check? And I said, $81,000. And he said, how much you owe on your house? And I said, $81,000. That was Dave's reaction, believe it or not. So Dave said, Craig, come on, man. I mean, you think this is just a coincidence? And I said, no. I know. And he said, yeah, you need to write that check. And I really didn't want to write it. I mean, just being honest with you, I really did not want to write it. But he said, hey, look, he said, this is going to be the best thing you do financially in your life, is to pay off this house. And he was right. You know, and I did that really through the grace of God. I think I was 52 or 53 years old when I became debt free. And so, you know, I'm 68 now, and as I've moved through my life and I get closer to retirement, it's just been been a real blessing. But I just have to give the glory to the Lord. You know, the things that happened, you know, my kids moving in with me, I had nothing to do with that, you know. But all these things that happened, the job I got where I got a company vehicle, so I didn't have a car payment. I didn't have a car payment. I haven't had a car payment in 20-some years. Which I'll never have a car payment ever again. But it was really a miraculous thing, and just like I said, just the way Dave reacted was pretty fun.
Given that, and let you know, I've never told anybody to do anything. So I just ask questions.
Yeah.
I don't understand myself. So when God is at work, He just works. Most obvious one I think I'll ever see.
That's such a blessing of a story. Thank you for sharing that, Greg. It's wonderful, Dave, to have you up here as well. So shifting gears a little bit. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus talks about serving two masters, and that you cannot do that. So I was curious to ask Dave and Donna, has that been an easy one for you to serve two masters?
Probably the most difficult thing, other than as a new Christian trying to deal with my sex life, this has been the number two, somewhere, most difficult thing. It was ridiculous, actually. So I started with when I went through Operation Timothy with my Paul. It was the first crack in my armor, and I got to. I think it's the 11th chapter in the third book or something, when it was on money. And so he looked at me and he said, next time you come, bring your checkbook. And okay. So I didn't think much about it, but I remembered it. And so I showed up for the next meeting with my checkbook in my back pocket, so hoping he wouldn't see it, because I figured he wanted something in my checkbook. You know? So we got all the way to the end, and he still didn't say anything. I thought I'd maybe forgot, you know. And he goes, so did you bring your checkbook? I said, he said, get out and write out a check for $100. I said, okay. So I wrote out the check. This is many years ago, and $100 used to be quite a bit of money one time. And he wrote it on, I wrote out the check, $100. I said, what's this for? He said, it's for CBMC, so this is a group of men that work behind the scenes here, and they take care of all the meetings and the people and the things, the meetings you go to, they oversee all that kind of stuff. So we help them with that, and that's your help that you've got there. Anyway, so, okay. So I'm kind of dealing with it, you know, it's all along. Not very comfortable. Where I come from, we don't give anybody anything. I mean, you work for everything you get. And that's how I was raised. Okay, so that's just fine. So then he looks at me and he says, now, you're going to get a receipt in the mail. And he said, you need to write one of these every month. I said, every month? Yeah, every month. Oh, I went to him at that meeting. But I began, as it happened, I got my receipt, and I got my next thing, and then I had to do it again. And I remember taking it, my hand going. So I wrote my signature. I couldn't even read it with my signature. It was really horrible. But it's one of the, probably the best thing with money that anyone had ever done for me. Because Joe knew me, and he knew what I needed. And he knew that what I needed to learn, and he was willing to meet me there and help me through that process, which was an amazing thing. And when you spoke to me, you didn't speak to just me. You spoke to me and my money. That's how it worked. Me and my money. That's who you talked to. And mostly my money, a little bit to me. I mean, that's how it was. So as time went along, I really struggled with this verse because I thought I would be the first guy who would be able to serve both God and money. Mammon, by the way, is possessions and boats and all these things that are idols. Money is going to become an idol too. So all of these idols is what mammon is. So I really did think, I said, it's ridiculous. I can do both. I can follow God. So as things went along, 3 years later, and I had made no progress whatsoever, and I was very frustrated. So I began to get frustrated. So I began talking to God, and I said, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know how to handle it. I don't know what to do. And this idea came to me. He said, you know, you're going to separate yourself from this money. I kept asking, what do you mean? So then he said, I started thinking I could get a box. Take a box and put it out here like this, and then the Lord somehow put my money in this box. So I did that. And then I took all my money and I thought it through and I put it out in the box. So my money was here and I was living. It was pretty good for a little bit, for a whole while. And then kind of talking to God about this morning, and he said, you got a string on the box. I said, a string on the box? What is that? And he said, somehow there was some kind of emotional string from the box into my heart. So it's stuck to your heart. I said, okay. Well, I didn't know what to do with that for quite a while. And then all of a sudden he said to me, cut the string. Emotional things, and I cut the string. It's a ridiculous story. I mean, still, it's almost stupid. I just kind of share with you. But from that day, he released me from it. And the process was so tremendous. I mean, everything just changed. Because I was actually a person that could walk around and not think about, hey, what's it going to be like when I retire? How much do I need? What do I do to get there? I want my investments like my Monopoly man. You know? And I would lay up at night in the bed just like Monopoly man. I would lay there and think about it. I didn't sleep on my back. That's the only difference between me and him. But I'd lay there thinking about this. And I'd get up at the night, I'd walk around. I'd have all these things going on. You know? And the problem was that I couldn't. It's hard to serve God and when that's going on. So it was just a real trial. So having some victory with that is probably, you know,
That's great, and I want to interject that I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I was nowhere spiritually, not in Christ, and I got invited to attend a businessman's lunch that happened every 2 weeks. Dave was in that lunch, and so for a year I got to watch him, and I thought he was kind of a weird, kooky old man. He was at the other end of the table, as far away from me always as possible. But by the end of that year, he had my full attention because of the way he talked about money. That release that he just described was real. And I didn't know anyone that addressed money that way. So then he was very intriguing to me. So that's a pretty strong, powerful testimony to that story that God worked in his life. Donna, was there anything you wanted to add to that? Yeah, so here's the question from Donna then. So how do the two of you make financial decisions together, and how do you approach it?
Are you talking about before or after the budget?
Either one.
Well, before it was like, I used a credit card. This is when we lived in Atlanta, when I go to the store. Credit card down and I did my purchase on it. You know, he made the money. And actually, that was one of the things that attracted me about him, is he had some money on it. I had the privilege of seeing his tax return, and he paid more in taxes than I paid in a whole year, so I like this guy. I didn't know how tight it was, though, in the purse.
When we came to Houston, we had to take a 50% pay cut. And so the people that were kind of overseeing what we were choosing to do, they told us if we didn't get on the budget, that we would never make it here. Otherwise, you can't take a 50% pay cut unless you do that. So we looked at each other, and neither one of us wanted to do that. You know, but it was either do it or don't come to Houston. That's the choice. So we were our backs were against the wall. So we decided to do it, and I can't go through all the experiences, but I can tell you that it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to us in so many ways. One of the major ones was that we began together to make our financial decisions, what we bought, what we didn't get, what we got. We began coming together with it, and it wasn't me doing it. I'm kind of a control guy. I run my business, and I run people, and I run things pretty fairly well. And I like to control things, so I like to do that with my wife, too. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it?
That's the one thing I was a little bit afraid about the budget. I thought, this is just another control mechanism, and I don't like it, because, I want to be free. But I didn't realize the freedom would come by having a budget.
I would just things like, I see a bottle of milk in the county now. It's like, say, $3.40.
I learned, I started taking the label off.
You pay $3.40 for that bottle of milk. If you go by Walgreens today, you see that sign up there? $1.59. You go, really bad, really angry. And she'd say, so you want me to go to 10 stores and buy the groceries? These are the kind of conversations we had. And so it was ridiculous stuff. But when we got the budget would tell us every couple of weeks we put the money in there and it was sitting there. And so together we made those decisions. So food, I pretty much stayed out of food. In other words, that was not my favorite thing. So anything she wanted to do, as long as there was enough money in there, she could do it.
Favorite little categories. We decided how much money was going to go in each category that we each had of it.
Excuse me.
We still do.
So that's one thing that it did, but then another thing that it did, it helped me in every part of my finance, it helped me in my investing. For instance, made decisions like in our medical account, where all these old people, when we were there, they were all living in town, these old people would be getting sick and they used the insurance from the organization I was with, and it skyrocketed. So I looked at Donnie and I said, this insurance deal, why don't we start thinking and talking about possibly trusting God with all that with insurance? And we did it earlier, we had done it another time when this guy tried to sell us $1 million worth of life insurance early on. I looked at her and she was 28 years old and I was 8 years older than she was. And we walked out of this guy's office who had a little sign in there that said, Jesus saves, Moses invests.
Jewish.
So I thought that was an interesting statement. And then before I left, he told me I needed $1 million. So I looked at her, it was over $1 million. I looked at her and I said, you're 28 years old. How come a woman, you know? I said, look at me. I said, look at me. Look at us. Now, look at my body. And I'm a tennis professional. Now, I'm running all the time. You think we're going to die? I said, if I die, one thing. But if you die, you're not going to be on the streets a year. And I'm supposed to fund you for all that time? I said, aren't we bet we're going to live? So we did. We bet that we're going to live. Here we are. And so we never paid an insurance nickel, but I did open a 401k. And the 401k that I had 45 years ago, you can imagine what that did. And so the decision was to believe things that we could do rather than listen to the world on all of our decisions. So we made a lot of those types of decisions, not listen to the world, believing that God's going to do things with us, and then make them so.
Sounds like you're really together in the decision making.
Our motives for some of our things, like for me, when you tell that little story, I've been poor before and it wasn't that bad. And so I wasn't afraid of that. And I did believe in God's spirit in whatever thing he chose. So I really wasn't frightened of that kind of thing.
And then how about today, many years into budgeting and this discipline with it, are there any times where you're making separate financial decisions? Are you always coming together in discussion about it before making a financial decision?
Not on small ones. Anything probably over $200. If anything's in the budget, it would be the one that's in there. But we talk about most things.
Dave, he ruined my old life, but he helped me get a new life. So one of the things he ruined in my old life was one day he said, you and Carrie, are your checkbooks together? Are you on the same checkbook? And I said, no, we have separate checkbooks. He says, we need to get that together. And I was like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. I did not like that. And I said, that's not going to work because if I'm, going to lunch and then she's out there spending, it's, we're going to go negative or something. And so it won't even work, but why would we even do that? And he said, because you and your wife are one unit. And together. And that clicked with me. Although it was hard, but that part did click with me. So thank you for passing that on to me. And so a final question here, and then we'll turn it to you guys. There are thousands of verses in the Bible on money. Why, we'll start with you, David and Don, why do you think that is?
Because where your treasure is, there your heart will be.
That's the one I respond.
Where your treasure is, there your heart will be.
It's 500 verses on faith, 500 verses on prayer, 2,350 verses on money, 40% of the Bibles are on money. So, see, we love money. I've said to guys, what do you think about this? Don't love God. What is it, a money verse that we talked about? Not coming to my head. Love of money, what is it? Love of God. It's a root of all. Love of money.
Oh, yeah, it's not me. Oh, no.
We live in denial and we don't love it. I think 90% of the people love money and want money. And so, but if you deny it, God knows it. He knows what we want to do. So we have to deal with, I have to wrestle with God. This is God wrestling stuff. Because, and there's reasons for that. If you look at 16, Luke 16 is just, I'll take a couple minutes on the next slide. In Luke 16, God talks about some things that are kind of interesting. One of the great chapters, because what he wants us to do is to use our money to win people to Christ. That's the major reason for money. And it makes no human sense. But I'm just going to give you just a little snippet of this, so you can come back and maybe read it yourselves. Almost there. It says in Luke 16, I'm talking about the parable, and I'm just going to give you the last part of the parable, and then we'll read the whole thing. He says, and I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. So mammon is used to make friends of yourselves with people so that they might find Christ. This is one of the major reasons for money. And then he says that when you fail, they will receive you into an everlasting home. So what that means is that these people that you're reaching will actually be those that welcome you at some point in heaven. It's an amazing thing. And God has all these things planned for us that are so far beyond our brain. And this is one of the big ones right here. He says, he was faithful in what is least. Faithful in what is least is money, as far as God is concerned. It's far, it's less. So he was faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. So we have to learn to be faithful in the use of money. And then he says, therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? So if you haven't been faithful with your money, he's not going to give you fruit. This is sad. This is a sad equation. So why are so many people fruitless? Because of money. Because of the handling of it. It's not having too much of it, not having too little of it. It's how we handle it. And God is watching us with the money, the resources that come in. And when we're faithful, he can then give us everything. Don and I, when we began in learning faithfulness and trying to be faithful to the Lord, when we began learning that, we didn't have little, we had very little. We were fine. We made it. We had to really labor at it. But as we became faithful, God was able to give us more. And this is how it works. You know, when you go to, when you hear the preachers a lot of times, they say, give me money. Give me money to the church. They'll keep God. It's a lot deeper than that. In other words, it's how you handle it and how you live every day and you use your resources. So then he says, and if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, bring it with you what is your own. So if you've not been faithful with your boss, with the people that are around, and being faithful to those around you, your neighbors, all your people, you're not going to get your own either. So he says, no servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and say the same thing again, in Luke 16, that we talked about earlier. You cannot serve God in the money. So what you can get rid of it, for me, was very difficult. So why does God do that? Let me show you why. And I think this is really, I love this. When you get this, what I'm talking about tonight, when you get hold of this, we have a hope. All of you have hope. And as a Christian, you're moving toward your hope. We always move toward whatever our hope is as a Christian. So if you're hoping that you're going to sit around and make a lot of money and God's going to bless you a lot of money, it's not really very good hope. But in Revelation 21, this is the hope. Revelation 21 says, now, this is John, now I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. I was pretty sad about that because I'm a fisherman. And so we get, there's no water, evidently no seas in heaven. So he says, then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. This is our future. So he is preparing us for this. So all of these things that God does with us is all a preparation for later. He is big time into out there someplace. In other words, it's going to happen. So the way you live today will appreciably affect the way you spend eternity. It's tremendous, yeah. So this is hope. And this is reason for what we do. And so it's an ask backwards thing. You know? So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But to God, everything's ask backwards from the world. So you know it's true.
Okay, so we have some time for questions from the audience, if anyone has one.
Because we had committed to do this, it was up to God to provide in different ways. He did it in different ways. I mean, went to a Bible study when we first, I'll make this really short.
And I was in the study. I didn't know any of these people, but I asked, we've just gotten to Houston, and I asked somebody, we needed a dentist. And so they recommended this guy. So I went to this dentist and took my children, and he, you know, did all this stuff for us. And he asked me about, what are we doing here? And I told him, well, I didn't know he was a believer, but he decided that his ministry to us was going to be taking care of all my family's teeth. And he did that for years till he died. I mean, did I know that's how God was going to provide? No, I did not. But he did. So that's how ends met.
What God honors really is like his faith. Seeing something, or doing something that we can't see how it's going to be. And he loves that. So, by faith.
Sir Jason,
how do you justify as your income goes up expanding your lifestyle? Right, so you might live within a certain budget, but then you start to make more money, and you still have plenty to give and plenty to then, you know, like, how do you get without feeling guilty, making it comfortable and say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and move into the bigger house or move into the bigger car that I can afford?
That's a really good question. My spiritual father told me that when you get yourself to a place where you have a nice house, and you and your wife can live in the house and enjoy it, it's not according to how much money you make. If you start making more money, more cars, people, and you, this is the world. So basically, I think what happens in our culture today is that the people that have a lot of money, you don't even know. You can't figure them out. And then the people who don't have any money are the ones that have all the big hoopla, the toys. Is Jay the one?
Yeah.
Jay. I remember Jay Baker coming to me one day. His income was really, really good. He's a real estate man. Went to a real estate auction. He came back and he said, hey, I'm going to win something today. He said, what's that? You know who's got all the money in Houston? I said, no. He said, these little fat guys that wear baseball caps. I said, you did? Yeah. I said, well, how did that happen? He said, well, I did this auction, and these guys in the front, these big old, the big hitters, they're all up there in the front, and they're going like this, you know? And when the auction was finished, these guys in the baseball cap would take it up and go. And they'd win the auction every time. I mean, it was amazing, you know, that started to, it was really an eye-opener, you know, to see, to him, that life is kind of fake. It's very fake. It's not real. This is a facade that all of us are in. And that's why when we walk by faith, that's real. That's the difference.
So it gets a little harder the more you have, because, you know, what do you do with it? Your kids will tell you what to do with it. He left, didn't he? Good.
Yeah, you have questions?
That actually rolls into what I was going to say, Erast. But I love that you're helping to new people, the aging of children. And it feels like we have 20 hands on the clock, right? At times, I'm like, what in the world? Like, we stop, right?
Did everyone hear that question?
No.
What is it like when you have kids with their hands in the pot and they're getting older and their hands are still in the pot? How do you handle that as kids are
in the pot? Or just take them out?
Well, I remember my daughter, when she got home from college, I said, so are you going to lease an apartment? And she said, no. Stay in my house. So I said, well, you know, this is what we do here. I'm going to have to charge you rent. And she said, rent? My house? I said, yeah. I said, it's not your house. It's my house. She said, oh, it's your house. I said, yeah. So I So once you get your friend, you've got to get a written rather than and find out how much it costs to raise the property. I'm doing a good deal. You're going to like it. So she said, well, I said, how much? So I said, the time is $200. $300.
She said, well,
no, I'll just, Sarah and I'll just go get a park. We don't need this. And so then they went out looking.
Realized, you know, how much it would have cost them.
Sarah decided to go live with her grandmother, so that left her. No.
So then I'm coming to her room one night, and she didn't like it. And she said, Excuse me, sir, it's my landlord. So, I mean, it didn't come with rejoicing, you know, on the other side. But I think people have to learn there's really no free rent in life. You know? So if you don't train them and teach them, they'll hang on with you forever. Especially the males, you want to get them out as well as you can.
So at what age do you decide to charge them?
Well, if they go to college and they finish college and they're working, you got a job, you know. I mean, they need to be kicking in to learn.
If they decide not to go to college, yeah, well, they decide not to go to college and they just get a job, that's fine too. But they need to kick in if they want to stay there.
So. Greg has a good story on this one too.
Yeah, I think with my kids, I have four kids. I pretty much told them that, you know, that I was going to help them. If they went to college, I would help you through college, but I told them don't plan on living with me when you're 22 or 23 years old, that I was raising them to be adults. So I would give my daughters grief all the time because, you know, they were 14 years old and they couldn't wait to wear makeup and all these things. And I'd say, hey, every woman I know spends the first 21 years of their life trying to look older and the rest of their life trying to look younger. And so, you know, you're going to become an adult. And it all worked out well with all my kids. My son, he was on a golf scholarship, a 40% golf scholarship at the University of Houston, and I was doing well financially, so I helped him with the rest of his tuition, and he lived in a sports dorm, and I paid for that. And at the beginning of the semester, I gave him $1,000 cash, and I said, look, this is going to be your spending money for the year, your beer money, because, you know, he's got his food's paid for, his golf's paid for, and I said I was trying to teach him, you know, to budget money. And I said, so don't ask me for money, you know, after this $1,000 is gone. And then a good buddy of mine, Tobias, called me 2 months later. He was on Facebook, you know, asking people if he could do some extra work for. But I, you know, I just wanted him to learn that this is how the real world works, and so that's what I did. I mean, it's tough because you love your kids, but I always felt like I was raising my kids to be productive adults. That was my goal.
Scott, how much time do we have?
I think we have about 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay, so we have time for maybe a question or two. Provided the money in there because we were faithful to put it in.
So that helped us make decisions. So that's some freedom in that.
Even if the money's there, what do you do when you disagree? How do you?
Man rules.
I'm not asking you.
And sleeps on couch.
Who's the 51% deciding vote?
We see the Monopoly man alone in his bed.
Yeah, if you're looking at that budget, it might be Monopoly man.
No, really, I don't think of myself as a particularly submissive person, but I do think that he is the head of our household, and I think that God speaks through him. If I pray and ask the Lord, I ask him about something that I assume, because I pray, that the Lord will be speaking through him. And as I was telling a friend of mine a couple of days ago, that even if my husband's wrong about the decision that he's ultimately made, that God has a way of making him right if I belligerently go about doing what I want to do. So, it's just work. And honestly, we're both pretty frugal, so being on a budget wasn't as hard as it might be for somebody who's one's a big spender and one's not. So I have to do say that.
I also think that you guys talked before about, you don't want to fight a dollar's worth over a nickel. I don't know the exact same, but
give your wife anything she wants. That's what you do. What if she wants it? She knows how much is in your bank accounts, and just do it. So I want my way driving up to my house, you know, riding up there. I'm just looking. Demon hero, something over my shoulder, you know, says to me, hey, you would do that. What is that? What does that mean? What do you mean I don't do it? So your wife has been asking you to paint the living room wood for about 3 years, and you know you have the money to do it, but you haven't done it. So I'm on the way home. I said, okay. So I get in the house and open the door. I said, now to get 3 bids on this deal here. And she looks at me and she goes, why? I said, why? I said, yeah, look, just get 3 bids and do it. She was shocked. She was like, what in the world happened? You know, he's doing it. So this is the time, which she'll say, yeah, that we're all learning all this stuff, you know. I'm trying to figure out all these things. That's the truism. If you have money to do, and you're harboring it like me, I mean, anything that I spent, I couldn't invest, right? And I couldn't make money on it. And right now, I'm looking at my bank account, and I'm trying to get lower. Like what I'm doing, I'm trying to get less. And so as it goes down, I'm looking at it, but if it goes down, I'm going, good to have your resources going this way. And does anybody like that? No. So anyway, I'm learning it though. I'm learning to get it lower, to continue to bring it down.
I think I'm a recipient of this conversation.
What's that?
I'm the recipient of this conversation. I got a new floor.
That's right. She was. That's right. See, there's a lot of benefit goes on because it reproduces, you know. You tell me about the new form, right?
Shame.
Tell
me shame.
Sam, one last question.
What did you see at the last? Where is your part that God is going to take care of?
Where's my there?
Where is your part that God is going to take care of you? Is it when you see it begin to go down?
Well, I already know he's going to take care of me. I mean, he's always taking care of me. So, what it is my own flesh head. You know, that we learned this is programmed into us. I mean, this program is in us. The culture is not in us. It's cultural. And so this is how it works. It's here. So we have to transcend that, I think. Is that what you're asking?
So the conversation continues, just not right now. We're here all week. You have easy access. That's what I love about Lone Ranch, is all the speakers, easy access to them. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, in between. So we're going to wrap up here, but available for questions all week long. So thank you for your time tonight.